Hey, everybody. Welcome into the back room. I'm Andy Ostroy. We have Paul Bagala back with us in the back room. We shall get to Paul in a second. But first, thank you for tuning in today. We appreciate you listening, and we'd love to hear your comments. So email us at backroomandy@gmail.com and or post on our social media, and we'll read some feedback next time. And if you like the podcast, please follow or subscribe and rate and review, and to be notified every time we post a new episode. So, Paul Bagala, he is a CNN political commentator, consultant, and New York Times bestselling author. His most recent book was the election year hit, You're Fired, The Perfect Guide to Beating Donald Trump. He's also been a columnist for Newsweek and The Daily Beast, and was one of the founding contributing editors of his late friend JFK Jr.'s magazine, George. But perhaps most notably, he helped engineer Bill Clinton's winning presidential campaign in 1992 with his partner, James Carville. He later served as counselor to the president, serving as one of President Clinton's closest aides and coordinating policy, politics, and communications. In the 2012 campaign, Paul was a senior advisor for the pro-Obama super PAC, making him one of the few people to play a critical role in electing two different presidents. Paul, welcome back into the back room.
Andy, thank you. Great to be back here.
We're going to start off with a softball question. Have you bought your Trump 3-in-1 Bible yet?
Yeah, that one gets me. I did go on Amazon. I'm a person of faith, you know that. And you can buy the King James Version, which is what Trump is selling, because it's in the public domain. It's not copyrighted. You can buy the KJV for $6.29. He's selling it for $60. And I don't know who's making the difference, but it's not Jesus Christ.
It's orange Jesus is making the.
Yeah. He's fleecing these people. And I guess I need to accept he's actually not, in their minds, a politician. He's a lifestyle brand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, I wish he had just like once cracked it open. It's like, I think it's Proverbs 22 that, lying lips the Lord hates or something like that. I mean, it's just like, open it anywhere at random and you will find a repudiation of Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Well, the reason I jokingly ask you about this, because I do know that you are a person of deep faith. And as a man of faith, what do you make of the MAGA movement now really starting to look more like a religion than a cult?
Really frightening. Yeah, more and more I see, I'm out in rural Virginia, I see guys wearing t-shirts that say, Jesus is my savior, Trump is my president. Whoa, okay, and Caleb Williams is my quarterback. Like, why do I throw that onto it? It's really upsetting. Out in the valley here where I live, there's a little church. And before the last election, the pastor, and I'm a Catholic, this is an evangelical church. So I have no idea. I've never been in there. I don't know. But it's right on one of the country roads I drive. And before the election, the pastor put up a sign. You know, they have those lettered signs that the evangelicals love. And it said, worship Jesus Christ, not any politician. And I thought, Pastor, you're getting it right, brother. Mm-hmm. And he and his followers are fusing. I mean, there's a huge concern of this Christian nationalism. As a person of faith, I know that one of the reasons faith has flourished in America and is dying out in Europe is that we never tried to impose it. We didn't let the government get in bed with the church. We didn't let the church get in bed with the government. And that wall of separation that Mr. Jefferson wrote about in his letter to the Baptists of Danbury, Connecticut, has really served us well. And these fools who think it would be good for the church to embrace and get in bed with the government, they're fools. It's going to be the death of the church.
So how do we get the gospel of that preacher to spread?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it has become a matter of identity politics. And somehow they have fused all this. Now, I do have friends who are evangelicals and love Trump. And this is what they all say. They don't pretend he's a godly man. And they say, you know what he is? He's King Cyrus, the Persian king who built the temple and saved the Jews, who himself never was a Jew, never was a man of God. But he saved us. He saved the people of God. And that's Trump. So this is the problem. You can't win for losing with these guys. Right. It's like, okay, if he were a godly man, by the way, if he were, say, Jimmy Carter.
Or Joe Biden. Or Joe Biden.
Or Joe Biden, who carries rosary beads with him at all times.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't be behind it. So they're, you know, it's, we all, I'm sure I do it too. We all use, you know, our faith to rationalize our politics. And I have a hard time seeing anybody reading the, like the 25th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew and not coming out a liberal. I read that and I am racked with Catholic guilt because I don't live up to it. I just don't. And I don't understand how others read that and come away so arrogant and judgmental. Hmm.
It is incredibly shocking, frustrating, and it just leaves you incredulous because it's like, if we've arrived at a point in this country when people of deep faith think it's okay to support a cruel, sadistic, serial sinning, racist, rapist sociopath, then I mean, you know, I could go on and on, but like,
yeah, there is that. And then they say things like, well, we have to have him to save the country. And I say, from what? Cheaper insulin? You know, rural broadband, by the way, I'm coming to you from rural Virginia because Joe Biden brought broadband out mm-hmm. to my farm. It wasn't personal, but he has wired.
He didn't come with the tool belt and install it for it.
Not himself. But it's so frustrating to me.
Yeah. It's got to be frustrating to so many people who are people of deep faith because, you know, to be a person of faith today doesn't mean what it was years ago. Because today you could be a person of faith and you believe in all the shit that I just mentioned that is horrible and antithetical to anything Jesus ever taught and what is actually in the Bible, to your point.
Well, Jim Wallace, I don't know if you know him. You should have him on. Reverend Jim Wallace.
Okay.
Evangelical minister.
Right.
W-A-L-L-I-S. He is the founder of Sojourners, which is a terrific, you know, it's not exactly my flavor of Christianity, but I sure love and admire him. And I read all his stuff. Reverend Wallace, this is hard. He is a real Christian. I try my hardest and can't ever make the cut. But Reverend Wallace wrote a piece saying the selling of this Bible and I think taking advantage of the good people of faith. Reverend Wallace comes at it from a different perspective. He says, Trump's soul is in peril. And he means it as a minister. Mm. Like, this is the sin of idolatry that he's practicing. He lists a bunch. I mean, it's a really important, I thought, Colin, I think he wrote it for the Daily Beast. But that's another way to look at it. Is if I were a better Christian, I really would be like Reverend Wallace. I'd be worried about Trump's soul. I'm just not. I'm worried about my country's future. And you know, he and the Lord can take care of his soul. But I'm not a minister. But I thought Reverend Wallace's take on this was really powerful because he was trying. I don't doubt Mr. Trump will ever have it read to him as he sits on his golden toilet. But he's trying. He's trying. And like I said, I'm not. He can go be. That's his problem, man. Mm-hmm.
Well, I got another softball question for you. We're approaching an historic, important election in November. You're a man who has been involved in two very important historic elections and helped the candidates to victory. Are you, Paul Begala, better off today than you were 3-4 years ago?
Oh my gosh, so much, so much better. On the day we're recording this, a new jobs report came out, over 300,000 new jobs in the month. I know there's a lot of pain. And I know politically it's not a good idea for Biden to just say, I did a great job. Please love me and reelect me. I personally, much better. Number one, I'm alive. I got a shot. I got the vaccine. You know, COVID has abated. Trump started the vaccine project. And it's one of the good things he did, warp speed. He never talks about it. You know, and you notice when he got COVID, he got monoclonal antibodies, and I want that. I want my president.
He got like the equivalent of the hot wax at the car wash.
Yes, he did. But then he's telling the rest of us to shoot bleach up our butts. But yeah, so in every way, I mean it. I'm better. My family's better. My community's better. Mm-hmm. I am really proud. It's actually not this coffee cup, but I have this coffee cup. It says, I love waking up in the morning when Joe Biden is my president.
Mm. Well, I got to get one of those. How do you explain the disconnect between the strength of the economy, which is undeniably the strongest economy we've had in decades, with the fact that there are people all over this country running around saying we're in such a bad economy? And interestingly, this week, the Wall Street Journal had a poll where if you ask people in certain states, and even in particular the swing states, how is your state's economy doing? They say great. And then the next question was, what do you think about the national economy? Oh, it's awful.
How's your personal economy? Great. I think it's this. This is identity politics brought even into your perceptive economy. And it's a comparatively new thing. People used to be able to honestly say, even the most Republican during the Clinton economy would say, well, yeah, okay, the economy's good, but it's really not Clinton. Like they had this saying, it was clever. They said, it is Bill and Al, Bill Gates and Alan Greenspan. Okay, fine. But at least they would admit the economy was going. I think now they're particularly Republicans and MAGA types are processing everything through what does the dear leader say? So the dear leader says TikTok is evil and bad. Happened to thought he think he was right about that. Well, he meets with a TikTok billionaire and he flips. He does a total 180 and says TikTok good. And they all in sort of bovine obedience nod their heads and chew their cuds and say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And so he tells him the economy is bad. It must be bad. It is so very oppositional. And, you know, I've raised four boys. My oldest, when he was a teenager, this is like classic teenage boy with a hard-headed dad and a hard-headed boy. He's going out to school and he's standing in the front yard and it's pouring rain. I say, Johnny, get your raincoat. It's pouring rain. He looks at me and says, no, it's not. Walks off. Because he's saying, you're not the boss of me. I'm not going to do what you... And I love it. He's like the perfect kid. He's now a young man. But that's what they're... You say the economy is good. And it's not by accident. Biden, like, released the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It took $1.60 off the price of gas at the gallon. You know, he's cracking down on these big corporations that are fleecing us with this greedflation and shrinkflation. And things are getting better. So it's action and response. And they just refuse. They're just going to stand in the rain and say, no, it's not, it's not raining. So I look at more where independents are. And independents, you know, I do live and die too much by the polls, I admit. But Franklin and Marshall College in Pennsylvania, a really good college with a really good poll, had a new poll out yesterday. And optimism in Pennsylvania is ticking up. I mean, it's really moving because they're living it. So I do have hopes that the economy will be a plus for Joe.
As a guy who does pay attention to polls, what do you think of the recent polls that do show Biden ticking up, that perhaps, whether it's the State of the Union speech, which was pretty epic, that maybe voters are starting to realize, as you just said, the reality of life right now?
I think so. Well, I think it's two things. They're beginning to say, well, you know, things are still tough and eggs cost too much and gas costs too much. I get that. But this guy's in there fighting and trying, and it's a little better than it was. I think that's number one. But number two is the greatest political strategist ever lived, not even my best friend Carbo. It was Henny Youngman. Every time they ask him, how's your wife? He said, compared to what? How's your president? Compared to what? How's the economy? Compared to what? So you and I would find this astonishing, but there was a huge percentage, like 40% of Americans, who just didn't believe Trump was really running. Like until this month, until a few days ago, when he secured the nomination for his party. And so they were comparing, as Biden used to say when he was Obama's vice president, comparing Joe to the almighty, not the alternative. Every sentence out of every Democrat's mouth has got to include compared to what? My sort of rubric for this is when I'm talking to Democrats, the base especially, where we have alienated a lot of younger voters, black voters, we've got to earn their votes back, but also swing voters. The operative word for me is threat. Threat. Trump is a threat. He's a threat. God knows he's a threat to your personal autonomy of your body, especially if you're a woman. He's a threat to your right to choose. He's a threat to your ability to marry the one you love. He's a threat to your Social Security, your Medicare, your student loans, your prescription drugs, your insulin. He's a threat. He's a threat. He's a threat. When I talk to Trump supporters, who I think we can peel off some, the operative word in my mind is betrayal. It's not, you're a stupid, toothless redneck. That doesn't get you votes. When you tell people you hate them, they tend not to like you. And they tend not to vote for you. So what I prefer, which I think is more true, is it's not that they're stupid and not that they're bad. They're really good and they're really smart. But they've been let down by the system. They want to throw a brick through that plate glass window of American politics. I get it. But the guy you chose has betrayed you. He stabbed you in the back. You know, he made millions of dollars from the communist Chinese while he was president. You know, did you know at the beginning of COVID, he praised the Chinese and he shipped tons of our personal protective equipment away from our doctors and nurses and orders, and he shipped them to China. He betrayed you at every turn. He promised you help if you were struggling, and instead, he cut taxes for billionaires like himself. He betrayed you. I think that's the message for those folks. So it's threat to the people sort of on our side, and it's betrayal to the people on their side.
And speaking of threat, and speaking of your friend James, I heard you recently say that we should maybe update his famous campaign mantra. Instead of it being, it's the economy stupid, it should be, it's the threat stupid, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this is what's different. And I have done this a long time. And man, and I wrote books criticizing McCain and Bush and all those guys. I don't regret it. I know President Obama beat Mitt Romney, and I'm really proud of it. Those guys were like human beings. They were same species as us. And I never worried that they would be a fundamental existential threat to the democracy. And Andy, I'm telling you, Trump is. And like your listeners should know this, this has not been publicized enough. There's this Project 2025 that the Heritage Foundation is doing for Mr. Trump. And it involves a wholesale takeover of the federal government and a fundamental attack on our constitutional rights, by which I mean, by the way, the other thing to check is the Brookings Institution has American Autocracy Tracker. And Brookings is a serious place, and they're not far left at all, and they're really scholarly, and they are tracking, it's probably like 900 pages, it's full of hyperlinks, and they're tracking and documenting all the way that Mr. Trump and his cohort are a threat to our democracy. Let me just tell you the most important. The Insurrection Act. It was first passed in 1792 because General Washington became President Washington. We became a country because we didn't have the capacity to put down the Whiskey Rebellion under the Articles of Confederation. So we form a more perfect union, and they're still rebelling. We got Shays Rebellion going on. I think in your part of the country, I think around somewhere around about Hudson Valley, but I could be wrong. So General Washington goes to Congress and says, give me the right to put down these rebellions, these insurrections. And they say, yes, sir. They pass the Insurrection Act, which basically just says the president declares an insurrection, he can send active duty troops to put it down. Now, it's been invoked many times in history, in the 20th century, most commonly by Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson to integrate schools. They didn't shoot anybody, but Southern states didn't want to integrate. God bless Ike, JFK, and LBJ. They used it, I think, quite rightly to put down an insurrection against Supreme Court orders. The last time it was invoked was 1992 when LA was in flames for riots. And George H.W. Bush invoked it. No one was shot. I was working for Bill Clinton. We went to South Central. We went to where there was still smoldering, where the riots had been. And Governor Clinton said the president's doing the right thing, invoking the Insurrection Act, because they just established order. Nobody was worried that Bush was going to shoot us. Trump has called the Insurrection Act, quote, my magical powers. He is itching to send troops into the streets to shoot us. And I'm sorry, I know that sounds alarmist, but I am really, really alarmed. And if Congress doesn't change the Insurrection Act, by the way, he will be able to legally do it. Now, there's a lot of, I hope, stopgaps. There's a few court cases that after the fact might suggest that Trump was going too far. He doesn't seem very chastened by those guardrails. So I'm terribly worried. He is a threat of the first order. And this is not just like, oh, gee, I don't agree with Mitt Romney's position on taxes.
No, those days are over. It's a whole new ballgame. Yeah. And so we had some big news this week. No Labels decided it's not going to put up a third-party candidate.
Yeah.
That's clearly significant.
Very, very. You know, Biden's task is to assemble the anti-Trump majority. You know, Trump is unique among national politicians. He has never, ever, ever, ever for a day commanded the support of the majority of his countrymen and women, ever once. Neither of his elections, none of his days in office. So the majority of the country really doesn't want Trump. Biden's job is to collect them all together. The problem with No Labels, the problem with Bobby Kennedy, the problem with Cornel West, the problem with Jill Stein is they all offer off-ramps to the double haters, people who hate Trump and hate Joe. Why? Because Trump's coalition is much more narrow. It's smaller, but it is impregnable. They're not going to flake off of him. Biden's, because it is the majority of the country and it's richly diverse ideologically and racially in every way, generation, gender, you know, it can flake off more easily. And so No Labels standing down is really an important moment for Biden to coalesce the anti-Trump majority. And it's like when Nikki Haley ended her race, she ended it on fire. And even though she'd been out of the race for several weeks, Trump is still losing 10 to 25% of his party in each of these primaries as a protest vote. Enormous opportunity for Joe. And no labels, I think, removes one of those off ramps. But Bobby Kennedy could still very easily tip the entire election.
Sure. And you, I want to ask you about the piece you wrote for CNN this past week. It's called RFK Jr.'s VP Pick is a Missile Aimed at Biden. Explain.
Well, he picked not somebody I would pick to be president, but a very impressive woman, young, which is nice when you have a 77-year-old running as an 81-year-old. She's an attorney. She's got a wonderful life story, where she's a child of immigrants and grew up very poor, came into vast wealth. She was married for a time to one of the founders of Google and has used that for progressive, philanthropic, and political causes. So I don't know her personally, but I got nothing against her. But you add all that up, and that is not somebody who's going to peel people off of Donald Trump. We're not talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene here. We're talking about an impressive, educated, progressive woman and young. That's all intentional. Believe me, Bobby is trying to sink Trump. I mean, to sink Joe and elect Trump. He's a very, very smart man and therefore must know he cannot win. And everything he's doing is designed to fracture the Biden anti-Trump coalition. He came on CNN recently, Bobby did. And he was asked about election denialism. And he said, you know, I won a magazine award for a piece I did for Rolling Stone saying the 2004 election was stolen from John Kerry. A, it wasn't. And two, as Carvel would say, two, he's trying to normalize Trump's election denying. It's really pernicious, brilliant, but really pernicious. He's telling everybody who believes the big lie, it's okay. See, because elections have been stolen in our country. 2004 was not stolen. Bobby is misleading you when he says that. I love John Kerry. Wish he had won. He didn't. So he goes through all that. Then he says, my head explodes. He says, Aaron Burnett was interviewing and said, well, you know, many people believe Trump is a threat to our democracy. And he says, well, I can't defend January 6th. That was appalling, he said. But let's face it, Biden is a bigger threat because he alleges falsely that Biden somehow used the government to silence Bobby Kennedy's vaccine skepticism. It's not true. Private companies said, we don't want that stuff on our. I mean, it's a no shoes, no shirt, no service deal, right? You know, like, you're just not going to walk into Le Bernardin barefoot in a tank top. And they have a right as a private business to say that. So does Instagram. And so these corporations decided they didn't want Bobby's content because they thought it hurt their business model. And the fact that Biden's White House may have complained about it. Do you know how many times I worked in the White House, I've called journalists and complained about their coverage? Every day. So that can't be a violation of the First Amendment. That's part of the First Amendment, the give and take of the free exchange of ideas. But Bobby doesn't say any of that. He literally said that Joe Biden, a true patriot, is a bigger threat to our democracy than the guy who has said, I want to be a dictator for a day. The guy who has said, I want to terminate the Constitution. So Bobby's whole mission is, I have no idea his motives. I can't peer into his soul, wouldn't want to. But I can look at his conduct, and his actions are all with a singular purpose, which is to fracture Biden's coalition, which can only elect Trump. And again, I have nothing against Nicole Shanahan. Don't know her. She seems very impressive to me. It's a bit of a leap, I think, to go straight to one heartbeat from the presidency, but that's not my call. But I know what he's doing. He's trying to sink Joe.
Where do you think it ultimately leads? I mean, right now he's only on the ballot in five states. His campaign says he's got a few others that, you know, Arizona, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Nevada, that he's going to be on the ballot. Do you think he's going to end up on the ballot in most states and where it counts? Or is this just the thing, like, we're going to wake up at Labor Day and his campaign will have imploded?
I don't know the honest answer. Ballot access is radically varied by state. Very hard to get on California, New York, very easy to get on Tennessee. None of those are swing states. I just don't know well enough. And it does take a lot of money and people. And if Ms. Shanahan decides to invest her wealth in this, she has more than enough to do it. So did Ross Perot. Ross Perot got on all 50 ballots plus DC. So you can do it. It can be done. And I just know
here's the, you know, in baseball, the Mendoza line, if you hit over 200, you know, and in this election, the third party Mendoza line is 1.8%. So Hillary runs, she gets more votes than Trump, but Trump wins because in the swing states, third party candidates get about 6%, a little bit more, but 6%. And so Trump wins. The next election, Trump's vote goes from 45.9 against Hillary to 46.9 against Joe. He gets a little better, but he loses. Why? Because third party candidates go from 6 to less than 2. And all of that goes to the Democrat because people woke up and they're like, holy smokes, I can't spoil my vote, waste my vote, and elect this guy or reelect him. And anything over 2% could kill Biden's presidency, could end his election. And Biden's getting like 15. That's how serious this is. It is very, very serious. Now, I think that will fade as people like me try to explain to voters the only thing going on here. Bobby couldn't. The greatest politician in the history of America was Teddy Roosevelt. He won the Nobel Peace Prize and was a war hero. He revolutionized American politics. And after he served, his successor, who he anointed, becomes president. And of course, Teddy didn't like it. So Teddy challenges Taft in his own party. Can't succeed in doing that. So then he forms a third party. He doesn't succeed in that either. All he does is elect a Democrat. So if the greatest politician who ever lived couldn't do it, with all respect to Bobby Kennedy Jr., he's no Teddy Roosevelt. So there's no hope of him winning. No chance whatsoever. He won't carry a single state. I got in a lot of trouble for this, Andy, but it's an old saying that Daryl Royal used to use, the coach of the University of Texas. He said about TCU, which I happen to agree with, was TCU going to win the conference? And he said, this is how I view third parties. He said, they're just like cockroaches in the kitchen. It's not what they tote off that bothers you. It's what they fall into and foul up. And Bobby could fall right into those swing states. And you know, that whole box of Cap'n Crunch could be ruined. If one, they can't tote it off. But one roach falls into your Cap'n Crunch and it ruins the whole thing. And that's Bobby's strategy.
So let me ask you about Liz Cheney. We know that she has vowed to do anything humanly possible to make sure that Donald Trump never steps foot in the Oval Office again. We saw that in the last election, she stumped with and endorsed Alyssa Slotkin. How far do you think she will go with and for Joe Biden? And even more so, is she the catalyst to reach out to a Kelly, a Mattis, other people and say, guys, I'll lead this show, but you got to be on the show with me?
Absolutely, Andy. Absolutely. I wish you were running the Biden campaign. My guess is they're doing this. That is exactly right. I probably disagree with Liz Cheney about 95% of the issues, but she has been remarkable in her courage. She has sacrificed her political career. The worst drubbing I've ever seen in a primary in her home state. She has endangered her personal security. Let's face it, there's a lot of crazy people who would like to hurt her. All because of her fidelity to the Constitution. I am in awe of her courage. And she can create a permission structure. Mm-hmm. You know, these double haters are the key to the election. They hate Trump, they hate Joe. The double haters voted for Biden last time by like a margin of 17%. He needs that again and more. And she can be that bridge. You know, I would love to see her endorse Biden. I'd love to see Romney endorse Biden. I'd love to see Murkowski. Mm-hmm. I don't think Susan Collins ever will. But there, Adam Kinzinger, the congressman from Illinois, who also sacrificed his career for opposing Trump. And then many more, these generals you've talked about. General Kelly, no liberal he. John Kelly, 4-star Marine general, by the way, and a gold star dad. He lost his son in service to our country. He came out in my colleague Jim Sciutto's new book. And on the record, said Trump to him, said admiring things about Adolf Hitler. Said, well, he fixed the economy. And General Kelly says, well, to what end? He turned the economy against his own people, against the humanity. I mean, he told him, he's trying to tell the president of the United States, you're not allowed to praise Adolf Hitler. So people like that speaking out, I think, can create a permission structure for the people who hate both of them to say, okay, this is different. My God, if Liz Cheney, the most conservative politician I know, can't stomach this guy, maybe I can, you know, join her on that progress. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take more than just liberals like me and you, Biden and Harris, talking about it. It's going to take that permission structure.
Well, one thing we do know is that the next 7 months are going to be absolutely cray-cray. And one thing I look forward to is you coming back into the back room to talk about it. So thank you for your time today. It's always fun. And look forward to our next chat.
Andy, thanks so much. This is always fun. Thanks, buddy.
This episode of The Back Room was edited and produced by me, Andy Ostroy. It was co-edited and co-produced by Maddie Rosenberg and co-produced by Jen Hamoud. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Hollander, and our logo was designed by Cricket Langell. And special thanks to Patricia Wind. Please take a moment to rate and review the podcast and also follow or subscribe. Until next time, keep your eyes on Washington, Hollywood, and your own backyards, and have a great week.